Good afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. Second hour is going to start off a little smoother than the first hour.
Yeah, you're all settled in.
Yeah, and we're all situated.
Got all headphones.
Somehow we time traveled through a 5-minute news break. Like it was 20 seconds. So my name's Aaron Ryan.
And my name's Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill, on November 28th, 2021?
Well, on this November 28th, 2021, we have a sponsor, Pape Machinery. Pape Machinery is our local
John Deere. We only say these things so we can hear Travis laughing in the engineering.
Yeah, very distracting. Right in the middle of my bit.
Work with it.
Okay. Yeah, they're our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. And if you have any needs, any tractor needs, ag needs, go up and see them or give them a call. They can do it all up there. If it's selling you a new tractor, fixing your old one, getting parts for your ag equipment, they can do it all up there. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at...
.com.
Pape Machinery.
.com.
There you go. Yeah, you'll remember it now.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I'm all ready.
Yeah, they pay us for these. Can
I'm
you
ready
believe
for
that?
Next week.
Yeah.
So, I guess I should give the masochism alert.
Uh-oh.
We forgot to do that.
Do tell.
Bill and I have been married 25 years.
God, I forgot it.
I've been giving Bill a hard time for a quarter of a century.
Yeah. And if the truth were known, I would say maybe 5 of those both of us remembered before it was over. Yeah.
No, that's actually a lie.
That's a lie, isn't it?
You stink at that.
Yeah.
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 But I saw my favorite meme for Christmas this year. Feel free to steal it. Maybe I should put it online so people can actually cut it and paste it. It's just a black square with white writing that says, "Instead of presents this year, I'm giving everyone my opinion. Get excited."
It's coming.
It just seems so fitting for this year. And it could go, you know, really either way. Not to be confused with Santa, who's gay in Norway.
Ugh. Oh, yeah.
I said it out loud.
Santa has a boyfriend now.
Santa has a boyfriend in Norway.
Through Mrs. Claus to
So the magic of Christmas is now ruined
bank.
For every child in Norway. Boo.
Yeah, boy.
That's worse than telling him he isn't real.
Yeah,
what the heck?
Brokeback Snow Mountain.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Travis liked that one. Don't encourage him.
Yeah.
Marry you for the next 25 years.
Okay.
Inappropriateness
is over now.
Yeah, the inappropriateness has just ended. Except that we should go back to the song we played at the end, you know, the Moonlight and Vodka.
Yeah.
I forgot to preface that. That's, I'm sure, the Bernie Sanders...
honeymoon song.
Honeymoon song.
That's right.
Reminded me of our anniversary a week late.
Yeah. Yeah.
Playing the Bernie Sanders honeymoon song. We need a song. Maybe that'll help. Yeah, probably not.
So,
Dr. Pry, I'm sorry. We unceremoniously... silenced you right before the hard news break. Sorry about that.
Not at all. I'm sure what you have to say is more interesting to hear.
You're so kind.
Give him 5 minutes of news to lead up to the buffoonery.
Oh, my gosh.
So we
were talking about Soviet domination versus what it was during the Cold War.
Yeah, when they were scared of us.
Yeah, I don't think they're scared of us anymore.
Oh, they're not. And they wanted to to complete my thought on this nuclear. Why is that so critical? And why might it be that the Biden administration will adopt a nuclear no first use pledge? And that's because, you know, in this nuclear posture review that's coming up in January, that's when it's supposed to be completed. The left, including many leaders in the Democrat Party and many high-ranking members of the Biden administration itself, have been pushing to cut drastically our nuclear deterrent. We've talked before on this show how there are people who want us to shift to a minimum nuclear deterrence posture so that we only have a few hundred nuclear weapons instead of the 1,500 nuclear weapons. Really, we only have 1,400, but we're allowed up to 1,550 under the new CIR treaty. Some people want us to, there's a powerful movement that wants us to get rid of all of our ICBMs, to take the nukes off of the bombers so that the bombers have no nuclear mission anymore, and to cut the ballistic missile submarines in half, so that instead of 14, we have fewer than half, six, you know, future ballistic missile submarines. And the Pentagon is the Department of Defense, and most of the responsible people in Washington, unfortunately few of them are working for the Biden administration, are all against that, saying we need the ICBMs, we need to maintain a nuclear triad of bombers, submarines, and we can't afford, you know, to cut down to just a few hundred nuclear weapons, that it could be suicide to do that. And it may be that, and Biden, if the Biden administration disappoints its political base and its supporters in the Senate and the Congress, you know, people like Elizabeth Warren and Representative Adam Smith, the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee who writes the defense budget. I mean, these people are really powerful who are wanting these things. And so they have to throw them a bone. They have to do something to make them happy. And, you know, the Pentagon, of course, always wants its nuclear capabilities, the forces themselves. But even if the Pentagon gets what it wants and the modernization of the triad continues, all of that will be undercut if the Biden administration yields to this argument that, oh, look, the nuclear posture, no first use pledge doesn't cost anybody anything. The no first use pledge doesn't cost anything. It's just words, right? So you're not giving up an ICBM. Wouldn't you rather get your ICBMs, but let us give the no first use pledge? Wouldn't you rather get your strategic bombers? Just let us do the no first use pledge. Isn't that reasonable, right? The way Washington always works,
yeah,
on compromise. But if they do that, the whole point of the nuclear deterrent is undermined, you know, because it kills the concept of extended deterrence. You know, it's basically telling our allies they're on their own. The United States is not going to use nuclear weapons to save you from an adversary aggression. You know, only if they go to nukes will we use nukes too, and by then it'll be too late. And Russia and China don't need nukes to conquer our allies. You know, we've had 18 war games that shows that China can take over Taiwan and dominate the South China Sea, and we lose. You know, we've had numerous war games that show that Russia can conquer Ukraine and the frontline NATO states in 72 hours. You know, they don't need nukes to do that. But if we do get in a shooting contest with them, because we've fallen so far behind, both technologically and in terms of numbers, we lose anyway. But at least our allies, you know, will think that and have the hope that that we would be able to come to the rescue with the threat of nuclear weapons. That's what has kept the peace since the end of 1945. You know, the possibility of a nuclear conflict. You know, and that has successfully every year, you know, deterred our adversaries from rolling those cosmic dice that we keep talking about,
right,
and launching World War III. But if we rescind that no first use pledge, in effect, that will change the world order overnight to one dominated by Russia and China. The United States could no longer pretend to be the leader of the free world. All of that is underwritten by our ambiguity. It's not even a first use pledge. We haven't promised we're going to use nuclear weapons first, but it's the possibility of keeping that option open. And we do plan for it. We have planned for it. The Cold War, we've exercised it. All of that would stop in the context of a no first use pledge. And so that's how close we are. I mean, this is my long-winded answer to your short question about where are we relative to those days. That's how bad off we are.
Well, what?
I mean, we weren't anywhere near losing the Cold War during any point, from Kennedy to Reagan, as we are today, where we're basically one misstep away. And it's not a misstep even involving weapon systems. It's just a policy statement, you know, the no first use pledge. If that is canceled and we give a nuclear no first use pledge, I think that that would basically amount to a surrender. It would amount to an American surrender in the new Cold War without a shot being fired. You know, saying, you know, we're just not willing to take the risk anymore. You guys, you realize you're on your own. You know, you can't count on the United States to defend you. I mean, that's why we're the leader of the free world, you know, because we provide that umbrella of security to protect our allies, which would then disappear with a stroke of a pen or a statement from the president.
Right.
That's how close we are to losing everything.
Well, having run these war games and coming out on the short end of it every time, you know, Russia and China, you know, have those same results. What do you think is holding them back from a non-nuclear confrontation?
Well, two things. You know, first, we're a national security freefall. You know, every day under this administration, things get worse and worse for us. You know, we still haven't passed the National Defense Authorization Act for this year.
Right.
You know, it hasn't even been passed. There are big consequences for that in terms of our military readiness. You know, that's not a small thing. I talked about the nuclear posture review at some length here about what could happen in the nuclear posture review. You know, I described a happy outcome, you know, where the Pentagon gets everything it's asking for. You know, that's not sure to happen by any means. You know, it's really possible that the Biden administration might decide to ban U.S. ICBMs and give the left everything it wants. Why shouldn't it? I mean, they're their political base. And they've been agitating and wanting those things for years. They might get everything they're asking for plus the nuclear no first use pledge, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if I were on the general staffs of Russia and China, I'd want to wait and see. Is the United States really going to be that stupid? You know, are they going to give up their ICBMs? Are they going to denuclearize their bombers? Are they going to cut that ballistic missile force in half? I'm not going to go to World War III until I find out whether they're going to do that, especially since it's a really good chance that we will do that, in addition to a nuclear no-first-use pledge if we do that. So we haven't hit rock bottom yet. We're still in a national security free fall. And I think they would hold off a decision on aggression until they see just how bad does it get on the U.S. side.
Well, that makes
sense.
And
this doesn't even count the domestic disruption. And, I mean, just over the Thanksgiving weekend, we took the statue of Thomas Jefferson out of New York City Hall, right? You know, so the revolution continues within the United States that is extremely divisive and weakens us as a credible adversary in a future conflict. Inflation is eating away at our strength. You know, so in addition to these substantial, obvious military factors, you've got all these soft power issues that are going on where our soft power gets less and less every day. You know, how much more damage can an idiot like General Miley do to our military with this search for white supremacists in our ranks? We've got officers resigning in droves, being driven out of the military, some of our best people. You know, that's still happening. And then, so that's one factor. But the other factor, of course, is, you know, Russia and China both would rather win without war. They're so close to being able to achieve that. All we have to do is just one policy misstep, like this nuclear no first use pledge.
Sure.
Or another Afghanistan somewhere, maybe over Taiwan. You know, where a country, or Ukraine, you know, it might happen tomorrow. Maybe Russia's getting ready to do it now. You know, I might be mistaken about them wanting to wait. You know, Putin made a speech over the summer that basically amounts to a justification for Russia annexing all of Ukraine. And I suspect they wouldn't stop at Ukraine. They would probably go after the NATO frontline states. I can't remember if we talked about it on this show before, but we had this unprecedented situation. I mean, this is the second time in 1 year that Russia has mobilized enough forces on the Ukrainian border.
Hold that thought, Dr. Pry, before we get started, so I don't have to interrupt you. Let's take a quick break. We're going to come back because we do need to hear more about that. That is kind of being downplayed.
Yeah, that's the hot spot right now.
And I also found the theme song for the Biden's security policy. Believe it or not, I had it right in my playlist.
Really?
I'm not kidding you. And then the song they're probably piping in for, you know, General Miley and his friends.
Yeah.
So anyway, I found a couple of good ones for you.
All right, we'll be right back.
Yeah, you're listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Another Biden foreign policy hit. I was really tempted. There were so many things. You know, the Tubes wrote a great song called I Don't Want to Wait Anymore. You know, I was thinking about that one. There were a lot of options there. But
what
magic.
Was the great song you had about some KGB woman or something?
earlier. Moonlight and Vodka.
Yeah, Moonlight and Vodka. It actually brought back memories, you know. About my own James Bond moment. hardly that, but it did bring back memories.
Boy. It was pretty classic, though. You know, I think she's looking at me. It's like, well, and then, you know, we have all the, you know, Eric Swalwell jokes, but that wasn't in Russia. I've got to find the Chinese version.
Yeah.
Preferably something that rhymes with Fang Fang. Yeah, there's a lot of good spy songs out there. But honestly, the Biden administration seems to think that all the, you know, foreign policy and all our strategy and how this stuff is done is with magic. I
think he just has no understanding of foreign policy.
Well, who was it that said that everything he ever was it Gates that said that every decision he ever made was wrong?
Yeah, foreign policy.
On foreign policy?
Yeah.
And look at his advisors. I mean, you take our new Deputy Secretary of State, you know. Oftentimes, the Secretary of State is kind of a figurehead, you know.
Yeah.
Not always the case, but often the case, you know, where they haven't really been a person who's been steeped. But usually, the next person below, the deputy, is supposed to really know what they're doing, you know. But we've got Wendy Sherman as our Deputy Secretary of State. You know, and who's Wendy Sherman?
Yeah.
Well, she was a friend of, during the Clinton administration. You know, she's never had any training, you know, in international security or strategic studies. You know, she's trained as a social worker. She was a social worker.
Oh.
And she was the head of the Office of Child Welfare in Maryland.
She was terrifying.
The director of Emily's List, you know, which is an organization designed to get feminists who support abortion elected to office. And that made her a big friend of Hillary. And so Hillary brought her into the Clinton administration. And, you know, she got a big job in the State Department. And she was, you know, one of her first, you know, roles was to author the agreed framework with North Korea, you know, which basically made a nuclear North Korea irreversible. Then they brought her back during the Obama administration. And she was one of the authors of the Joint Conference Plan of Action, you know, the Iran nuclear deal. Okay, so two of the worst foreign policy disasters we've ever had, you know, can be laid at Wendy Sherman's feet. And now she's the Deputy Secretary of State.
Yeah.
And she's been entrusted in our strategic stability dialogue with Russia. We're making all kinds of these decisions that we were talking about, you know, should we renew the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, even though Russia's cheating on it? Should we renounce first use as an option and have a no first use pledge? Should we freeze our ballistic missile defenses and promise never to deploy an SDI? All these things are on the table and more. Wendy Sherman, who knows nothing about it, has a proven track record of being a complete incompetent, but she's the one.
Well, she worked with John Kerry and was
not just Biden, but his whole team.
Well, she apparently worked with Kerry and was one of the lead negotiators on the Iran nuclear deal. So, you know, she's got that.
Exactly. And, you know, his whole team, Anthony Blinken is a novelist, you know, his whole team is. But then again, these people have been schooled by the new left. They really believe in this, that the America is institutionally evil, that we're chiefly responsible for the Cold War and for all the bad things that have happened in the world. And that you can, if only, you know, we will back off and give the Russians and Chinese what they want and respect them as equal powers, and that the world will be in a better place. Now, the same philosophy that the Obama administration had, a new left view of the world, the kind of view that the Harvard International Relations faculty has of the United States, which is extremely negative, and thinks that our fears, the things we've been talking about today, are paranoid fantasies of the right. And, you know, that can be dismissed, you know, because we are, we're really the source of the problem. And so that's why they seem so blasé about all this. And we were talking about the situation with Ukraine, you know, the second time in one year Ukraine has become a crisis. Maybe the Western press is playing it down. It isn't being played down in NATO. They're absolutely terrified. In NATO and Europe, and what they're saying in the Western press about what the Russians might do. Because, I mean, I could be wrong. We talked in the previous segment about why haven't the bad guys acted yet, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I could be wrong. They might not wait. You know, the Biden administration is such a tempting target, they might decide to act. And one of the most likely places they could act would be against Ukraine and maybe against the NATO frontline states. Russia can overrun Ukraine in 10 hours. And we've had something happen there in this second crisis that has never happened before, which is Lukashenko, who's the dictator of Belarus. It's the country on the other side of Ukraine. And it's between Ukraine and Poland and the NATO states in the Baltic. But Lukashenko has requested that the Russian general staff send nuclear Iskander missiles to Belarus so that they can be put on the border facing Poland and the Baltic states and the Czech Republic and Slovakia. All of these are frontline NATO states. You can be sure that the Lukashenko is just, Belarus belongs. Supposedly it's independent, but Lukashenko is a puppet. He's a puppet. You know, he does whatever Moscow wants him to do. And you can be sure that they told Lukashenko to make that request.
Which is fairly frightening. I mean, if they're going
to... It's a public request. So they're signaling us that they're willing to go to nuclear war by putting nuclear Iskanders opposite our NATO allies. And so this is a significant nuclear escalation in the threat not only to Ukraine, but to the NATO frontline states. And who knows, they might deliver on those threats tomorrow. And I could be wrong about their being willing to wait. Maybe it's just so tempting, you know, because this administration is so incompetent and does nothing but talk. I mean, we have done nothing to reinforce Ukraine. Not that there's much we could do. You know, the fact of the matter is, you know, we will be hard-pressed even to defend. No, that's an exaggeration. We can't defend even the NATO frontline states, let alone Ukraine. Our own war games show the Russians rolling over us there. That was something I warned about. Maybe I talked about that in a previous show, or maybe it was a different radio interview. But when I was on the House Armed Services Committee staff, you know, I was responsible for, they sent me to the NATO frontline states, these countries before they became into NATO, all the Baltic states, Poland, Romania, and to meet with their military, to meet with their political leaders, to come back and make my assessment about should we expand NATO. And my recommendation to the chairman was that we should not expand NATO to the east. We can't defend it, and it would be giving these countries false hope, you know. There's also an old saying, it's actually, maybe it's not an old saying, maybe it's a Russian saying, that you should never commit for a nuclear war for a country that you can't find on the map. And, you know, very hard to justify to the American people that suddenly we have a nuclear guarantee, you know, to defend some place like Latvia, you know, and but that's what we have. And so, unfortunately, I remember talking to when it was the late, great Chairman Floyd Spence. He's not around anymore, but he agreed with me when I laid made the case to him. And it's not a hard case to make. You know, we were hard-pressed to defend NATO before it expanded. And we were on the defensive, okay? We would be on the defensive to hold off that 5-to-1 superiority in tanks and all the rest. To defend the NATO frontline states, we have to go on the offensive and project power into Eastern Europe, you know, which is something we've never done before. That territory, the Russians know it like the back of their hand. When they were the Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact, they exercised all over that area, you know, and not to mention the huge superiority in troops and tanks and tactical nuclear weapons that they have in that part of the world. But I guess people thought the Cold War was over, that it was done during a period when books like The End of History were out, you know, and that the whole world was going to become to follow the American example and become free and democratic, and the handful of tyrannies, like what was left of Russia, what was left of the Soviet Union, was going to wither away and go away. And so people thought that we would not have a new Cold War and that there was no risk in expanding into those countries. But that judgment turned out to be wrong. So anyway, that's where we are.
Yeah, and you know, on the flip side of that, we also have China and Taiwan threatening. So you know, I'm not sure the United States is really in any kind of position to defend any of these countries, are we?
No, we're not. We lose, and Russia and China, I think it might finally be sinking into Washington's head, something that we've talked about on the show before, I'm sure, is that Russia and China are allies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the new bloc that we face is far more formidable than the USSR and the Warsaw Pact. You know, Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran. And Iran is the world's leading sponsor of international terrorists, so that includes international terrorism. All these forces are on one side, arrayed against us. And they coordinate, they help each other. Russia and China support Iran's nuclear and missile program. They support North Korea's nuclear missile program. They coordinate their activities. You know, the Pentagon admits that we'd be hard-pressed to fight in just one theater. Well, we wouldn't be fighting in one theater. If we get into a World War III, it's going to be a multi-theater war. You know, there will be aggression by Russia against NATO. There will be aggression by China against Taiwan and the South China Sea, and probably against Japan and the Philippines. And there will be aggression in the Middle East from Iran, and probably against South Korea, and probably Japan, too, from North Korea. So we can't deal with just one theater, and our war games show us losing in the one theater, and against either of the great powers, the superpowers, China or Russia. So yeah, it's a real
You would think that would be a wake-up call.
And maybe the so-called American century, okay, it hasn't even been a century since 1945. This was supposed to be our century, okay, but maybe it's ending prematurely. You know, the case for America going into an isolationistic posture where we basically say, look, you guys are on your own, you know. Some conservatives, more and more conservatives are talking about that and talking about transferring nuclear weapons to Taiwan and our allies and saying, look, it's not credible for us, you know, to go to war with Russia or China in a nuclear conflict to save you, but it'll be credible if you have the nuclear capabilities. You know, for years, that was one of the objectives, too, of the first use of not having a no first use pledge. It was a chief barrier to nuclear proliferation. You know, we didn't even want our allies proliferating nuclear weapons, building nuclear weapons to defend themselves, because we were afraid that would make nuclear weapons more widespread. I never agreed with that, personally. You know, I always thought that if they're on our side, you know, let them arm themselves, including with nuclear weapons. It would make deterrence more credible. But I think that it's too late to do that now, to do it credibly. I think that when Japan and Taiwan and Germany do the calculations, if we were suddenly to say, hey, you're on your own, we're pulling out of NATO, we're going into a Fortress America posture, you know, you think of the politics of a place like Japan or Germany. They have a problem that's with their left that's just as big as the problem we have in this country with our left. They have, especially in Japan and Germany, you know, anti-nuclear movements that are just as strong, if not stronger, than ours. And the political leaders of those countries, when they say, you know, we're going to be on our own, do we really want to take the risk, you know, of being targeted by Russia and have to go through the hassle and all the expense of being an independent nuclear power? Or is it easier to just reach an accommodation, you know, declare ourselves neutral, which in effect is declaring themselves satellites to these totalitarian powers. And that's how you also win World War III without firing a shot, and which is what the outcome that Russia and China are hoping for. So, and to those who are listening, and among people that would probably include my wife, okay, because she's for all for isolationism, you know, people shouldn't think of that as being some kind of a magical solution to our problem. These are totalitarian states they're dealing with. It'll be a solution to our problem for a time while they consolidate their control over the rest of the world. But sooner or later, they will organize the rest of the world to come after us.
Yeah.
And we will be much weaker than we are today.
Because nobody's going to join with us again. We ditched them the first time. You only get to ditch everybody once. I don't think. I think the second time you wade in and go, no, let's be special friends. I don't think they buy that. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. You can find everything about the show, archives and commercial free archives and free to listen to archives at wethepeopleradio.us.
I used to sleep at the foot of Old Glory and awake in the dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the Great Compromise. That justice is the one thing you should always find. You gotta saddle up your boys, you gotta draw a hard line. When the gun smoke settles, we'll sing a victory tune, and we'll we'll raise up our glasses against evil forces, singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
In case you thought it was going to turn out bad, that's the scenario I have planned.
Yeah, that's right. We'll fire up them horses. Dr. Pry, hey, before we run out of time, can you talk a little bit about the Poseidon? I think that's, I don't think we've mentioned that on previous shows.
No, and obviously we're going to do Molly Hemingway's book Rigged on a different show, so you might as well just like,
yeah,
you know,
we don't have time.
No, look at your calendar and we'll hostage you another weekend.
About that. Sorry about that.
It's okay, we did too.
Yeah. Let me quickly mention Poseidon and then, all right. We could do a whole show on that.
Oh, yeah.
That's a Russian, a new Russian so-called doomsday machine. It's the first artificially intelligent nuclear weapon ever deployed, the most powerful nuclear weapon ever deployed. It'll probably have a selectable yield ranging from 2 megatons, possibly up to 200 megatons, according to open Russian sources. The yield most often given for it is 100 megatons. I mean, that's 10,000 times more powerful. 10,000 times more powerful than Hiroshima bomb.
Jeez.
And it's advertised as it's nuclear powered, so that it can basically roam around in the oceans for months or years. And it has no men on board. You know, again, it's artificially intelligent. It's variously referred to as an autonomous submarine. More often as an autonomous torpedo, but it's the size of a small drone submarine, and official purpose, the purpose they've talked about it most often, is to be a doomsday machine. The weapon would be detonated off the east and west coasts of the United States, which is where most of our population is located, and raise a radioactive tsunami. 100 meters high, a weapon of that yield could make a tsunami 100 meters high to inundate the east and west coast with radioactivity to make those areas uninhabitable. Now, possibly it could theoretically be used for that, but I'm very skeptical that that's the real purpose of Poseidon, because they can, if they want to take out the American population, they have other means of doing that. They could just make direct hits on the cities and use, you know, regular nuclear attacks to nuke the cities instead of going through such an elaborate system as using a radioactive tsunami. I think that Poseidon, and I've written a report on this that's available, Poseidon, Russia's new doomsday machine, that the purpose is to track our ballistic missile submarines. The thing they couldn't achieve during the Cold War, they achieved the ability to destroy our ICBMs in their silos. They could destroy our bombers on their bases, so they could get two of the three triad legs. They could destroy the ballistic missile submarines in port. Most of our submarines in a surprise attack would be in port. You know, today we have about 14 ballistic missile submarines. Two of them are in long-term overhaul, so we really have 12. On a day-to-day basis, we've got about 4 at sea, 4 submarines. And that's what would survive a first strike. They would probably not survive from a system perspective because the EMP would cut them off from Washington so that we couldn't get emergency action messages to them. But the Russians are very conservative military planners, and they don't want just a system kill. They would like a hard kill of the boat themselves. And I think that's what Poseidon is about. You know, they're deploying enough of these so that they could put 2 Poseidons against every U.S. submarine at sea, plus 1 against the ballistic missile submarines of France and England. You know, a 100 megaton warhead will make a huge underwater shockwave. You know, you could be more than 100 miles away, and the shockwave would still kill the submarine. And it's an artificially intelligent thing, so it's probably programmed for the various noises, you know, the signatures, the sonic signatures of our various ballistic missile submarines, and nuclear powered, so it can tail them, you know, tail them all the time until they're ready, you know, and then they would give a signal and take those ballistic missile submarines out. That's what Poseidon is about. Mm. I wanted to end because I was intrigued in hearing Aaron's introduction about things people can do to fight back against our growing tyranny. And I want to second the motion on that and suggest that in addition to visiting websites the people get more aggressive at becoming heroes in a second American Revolution. There must be a lot of young people who don't have jobs, who are at home with nothing to do but play games. I would suggest that you get involved in the real game of life and the future of this republic and do things like, well, what we need, one of the things we need to fight back on the conservative side is we need to start shunning and socially embarrassing our adversaries the way they have to conservatives. You know, the left-wing mainstream media is constantly mocking and belittling us. We should do the same thing to them. And it can be done on a local basis. You know, who's on the school boards? Who are the Marxists on the school boards? Who are the local politicians in city government, county government? Find out who they are. Dig up the truth about them. You know, publish that truth. Publicize that truth. Even if it's by word of mouth, you know. You know, in Florida, some gentleman recently opened up a restaurant that refuses to serve anyone who voted for Biden. Biden supporters are not welcome. Actually advertised.
Wow.
A lot of restaurateurs, everybody who believes in freedom should be doing that. Let's make life hard for them. They're used to being on their high horses and looking down their noses at us all the time. I wonder how robust and strong they are to stand up to that same kind of humiliation which they richly deserve, that ostracization from society, that shunning by their fellow Americans. Maybe that's what's necessary to deter them from engaging in tyrannical tactics against us. We're always playing by Christian rules, you know. We're always turning the other cheek, I think, to the detriment of freedom. So I would encourage much more aggressive tactics, including starting at the local level. It's something everybody can do.
Well, it's funny. At church, there's the way the pews are all set up on the far right, there's some short ones. There's a row of short ones from the back to the front. And during the whole virus hysteria, after they finally opened church again, they had these kind of like ropes. So they roped off every other pew, you know, so people couldn't be near each other. Well, for some reason, over on that far right side, those ropes are still up. Every other pew is roped up. And so 9 times out of 10, we go in. We always sit on that side. And I go in, flip the rope off, and sit in the one that's roped off.
Good
and,
for you.
And it was pretty funny because when Mass got over this morning, the lady in front of me, she turns around, she goes, "I just love it when you take those ropes off."
Yeah.
And
that.
I was kind of laughing. I thought, well, you know, let's go. I mean, obviously that's not going to start a revolution or anything, but it's so weird. I mean, Jesus was right, you know. We are the sheep. Anybody who's ever raised sheep, you can keep them in a field with dental floss. I mean, you don't need a real fence. They're terrified of everything. They'll never run away or try to get out or push on the gate or, God, you're lucky if you can get them to eat. They're scared of everything. You know, goats, on the other hand, are, you know, chewing their way out of everything and tunneling, and they've got plans. I don't know what they're out there doing, but, you know, bad things. You got to be serious if you want to have goats. But we keep acting like the sheep. And we got to stop doing that. It's just ridiculous.
Yes.
I always people say, "Oh, well, this is the end." You know, we're in the end times or whatever. And I'm like, look, I figure it's the end times when there are no more good jokes left. When they put out a variant that spells moronic, when you switch the letters around, and
right.
Nobody makes fun of that, nobody posts that on Twitter, nobody thinks that's amusing. We're doomed. So keep checking,
right.
You know, the
humor
will save us.
Yeah, humor can save us. Humor can be a revolutionary tool. They've been using it, trying to use it, against people's conservative views.
They just suck at it.
Culture wars forever. We need to start doing it. You know, you can be a revolutionary just by buying a politically incorrect T-shirt and being brave enough to wear it, you know?
Oh, like Bill's trans-vaccinated shirt? I don't think you were on the week that Bill learned about the transvaccinated shirt. That I think is funny. Bill, you want to tell them what the shirt in your mind says?
Well, it's got big and bold across the front. It says "Transvaccinated," and then in smaller print below it, it says, "I'm not vaccinated, but I identify as somebody who is vaccinated."
Oh, that's good.
So, wear that in a crowd.
Yeah,
you can pick them out pretty fast.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of humor to be had, and it doesn't necessarily have to harm anyone. But I think people are losing their sense of humor. And when you do that, you're not limber in your mind anymore. You know, the fear starts to creep in. And honestly, I think they've been really, I think they've overplayed their hand with the fear, because now people hear, you know, there's a new variant or whatever. And of course, all the jokes are, we're going to have to start using the Klingon alphabet because we're going to run out of Greek letters. But I don't know. I mean, it's time to stop. We don't have to rip anybody's mask off their face, although that's just so tempting.
Tempting to do it.
Yes, so tempting.
Right.
So
the founders did not write the Constitution for sheep.
Right.
In fact, they knew that if the people behaved like sheep, they would lose their freedoms. That's why Franklin at the Philadelphia Convention, the Constitutional Convention, said, you know, we've given you a republic, madam, if you can keep it.
Mm-hmm.
If you can keep it. Well, it's up to keep it now. With humor, or by more assertive means, if necessary.
Yeah, well, do something productive, obviously. But while you're doing that, don't miss the opportunity to remind people that, some of this stuff is absurd, obviously. And as long as they don't see it as absurd, they'll follow it.
I know. That's why they need to be embarrassed. That's why they need to be, verbally knocked up alongside of the head, to be brought back into reality, to be exposed to other opinions that say, look, we don't agree with you at all. You're not right about this. You are not following the science. You're living in the fantasy world, a bubble, and we don't respect that, you know? And yeah. I think it's way past time to find out who's in our schools, you know, that are pushing critical race theory, for example, and putting a spotlight on those people, and judges, you know, who let criminals out or who have politically skewed views on these things. They need to start paying a price, you know, starting at a local level, which is what, you know, is the only reach that most people have. But we need to reach.
Exactly.
You know, the Constitutional Republic was for eagles. Eagles have talons and beaks.
Yeah.
And
And independence. I mean, they're not a flock bird.
Right. Yes.
And the other thing, too, is we just, you know, while we talk about all the voter problems and all those things that go on, we have to keep reminding people they still have to vote. We had 450,000 people in California, Republicans, who didn't vote.
That's another conversation about whether.
Yeah, we could have tossed Gavin Newsom without that.
I don't want to discourage anybody from voting.
No.
They should vote. But I don't have high confidence that we're going to be able to turn this around. I mean, that's the topic for the Molly Hemingway book when you read it.
You pick that date.
I do not have high confidence just because we won in Virginia. All right,
we have to jump out. They're going to cut us off here. So we're terribly sorry. We will get back with you on the rigged. We want to hear your thoughts on that. So shoot me a date. You've been listening to We the People. Our guest has been Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, and you can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.